Good evening and welcome to The Thin Black Line tonight. Rudy Bremer here with you for 2SER's premier Indigenous program, made right here on Eora Country. Coming up tonight, I'm speaking with a man who's helping to blackify nerd culture. Ryan Griffin is the creator and showrunner for ABC's Clever Man, the show all about an Aboriginal superhero, and he'll be joining me a little later on this evening. But to get things kind of started, you know, Monday night, you can almost always do with a little more music. This next song brings together the brilliance and creativity of music producer Michael Ross with a mesmerizing sensitivity of Zachariah Fielding, who you might maybe recognize from X Factor and The Voice. Well, they've teamed up to create music that's exciting as it is emotionally moving. Sung in Zachariah's traditional language, Pitjantjatjara, this is Pukulpa. Electric Fields there with Pakulpa. They're an Adelaide duo. And that song was a little taste of Pitch and Jada there for you here on 2SER 107.3. You're with Rudy Bremer, and coming up in just a moment, I'll be talking blurred culture.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
You're here with Rudy Bremer on the Thin Black Line, the home of Indigenous news, current affairs, arts, culture, and all that jazz, right here on 107.3 FM. Now, on 2SER, we love letting you know what's happening in and around Sydney, and you probably know that the Sydney Writers Festival is gearing up once again for a week of literary indulgence. And tonight, I'm giving you an Indigerized primer on one of the panels that I'm really excited about. Joining me tonight is Ryan Griffin. Ryan, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Now, Sydney Writers Fest, maybe not your normal setting? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a real honor to sort of be asked to be involved in it. I think the panel that, you know, I'm on has got some amazing people on it. So
Ryan, you're on Blurred Culture, which has Nayuka Gori, Miranda Tapsell, Roxanne Gay, someone else who
Coulson.
Coulson, yeah. Yes. I was like, someone really impressive that I'm drawing a blank on.
Yeah. I'm reading his book at the moment, and it is phenomenal. It's hard-hitting. It, you know, doesn't hold its punches back at all. It's amazing.
I suppose to start with, what we should kind of cover is what is actually, what is a blurred?
Look, I wouldn't say there's a definitive definition of what a blurred is. I think it is a subcategory of you know, nerd culture within pop culture in general, I think. But it is, you know, it is black people enjoying that nerd culture on their own level and attaching themselves to certain aspects that reflect who they are as a person, and I think in that sort of pop culture world, it's quite easy to dive into and attach yourself to that as a person of color.
Well, I think one of the thing that sort of brought me to blurred culture was when, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago they were going to make yet another Spider-Man film, and there was a bit of talk about Donald Glover maybe being Spider-Man, and people were going, no, well, he can't because he's black. But he sort of pointed out, well, it's a young guy who's raised by his grandparents or great aunt or whatever they are, you know, low socioeconomic, like living in that urban kind of culture, like everything about it actually does sort of, it works. And I was like, yeah, why isn't Spider-Man black?
Yeah, no, look, I think, you know, if we look at the superhero world as an example, I think, you know, we're always talking about diversity on screen or, you know, on any sort of platform at the moment. And I think superheroes have been doing it for years, really. Unfortunately, it's on the page. It doesn't reflect on screens or television shows or anything like that. But, there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of culture in that sort of stuff, but sometimes, it is very, it's a thinly veiled culture. And I think that's sort of what, is kind of the big movement at the moment is making sure that, black culture is on the page and it's done right.
I mean, you're definitely putting it right there on the page. You're the creator and showrunner of Clever Man, which we'll start talking about the TV first, because I know there's also the comic that's coming out, and that's kind of cool. But in terms of actually like approaching an Aboriginal superhero, were you looking to fit within the canon, or were you looking to sort of break the mold and make your own?
I think it was a bit of it's mixing the two together. I think because, as an example, because we have the cultural sensitivities around what a clever man is, you sort of can't fit the standard superhero mold, because if we use film as an example, you always have that 2-minute montage sequence where, as Spider-Man, for example, is figuring out how to use his web and how to swing and all that sort of stuff. But for our Cleverman, we can't really tell that because that, you know, from the elders and the country there where we got these stories, it was strictly men's business. So we can't portray that initiation or coming of age to be able to do that. So we have to, you know, mold it to what works for us. So I think we definitely lean on that world, but I think we make sure that we stay true to the culture first.
And I think what was really interesting about it is the fact that because it is that sort of meld, a lot of people outside of Australia were really finding, they were finding it quite easy to step in and see themselves as Hunter Lockhart's Page character, like as sort of the hero or the sort of, well, someone who wants to be a hero.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two things I think that's really helped make this show travel is one, our culture's never really been portrayed on screen to this sort of level where it makes us quite unique and everyone's sort of looking for that, something new to watch. But the politics are so relatable and that's what's universal about the program. So, you know, we're kind of ticking the boxes that people were looking for at the time. But it also allows us to explore the show in so many different ways.
I did find I've been in so many conversations with people about whether the hairy people are Aboriginal people or are the Aboriginal people, as in like sort of placeholders and allegory, or are the Aboriginal people just themselves, and how much, you know, as the creator, and bearing in mind you might feel like this is up to other people. Do you have a step? Do you have an idea?
Well, okay. So for me, you know, there's two ways that we've looked at the hairy people for the show. So the hairy men stories that we were told were sort of always about lessons of understanding land and staying away from either sacred places or dangerous places. You know, the stories where if you go over there, the hairy men will get you. And so that was the first sort of example that we were using in the show. We wanted to present these creatures as, you know, as using X-Men as an example. You know, they're kind of used as an allegory for anyone who wants to feel like they've been oppressed or they've been the other. So that was what we were creating there. We were using Aboriginal issues, post-colonizations, to embed them into our hairy people in the show. But on top of that, we wanted those the hairy people to be played by Aboriginal people. And there's two reasons for that is, you know, if we're going to do a show about trying to put more blackfellas on screen, then if there's any roles that, you know, should be ours are for our culture. But also on a sub level to that was, you know, if we're also going to have a story that we're adjusting, we're the oldest culture in the world, living culture in the world, and having it played by anyone else but the people from that culture was just wrong for me. So it was kind of a bit of both. But the main use for using the hairy people in the show was to allow it to become a universal thing and allow anyone to put their views, political views, into those characters.
Do you find, and maybe not necessarily in relation to Cleverman, but sort of looking more broadly, do you find that shows that have that focus of, will have a predominantly person of colour cast?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. I feel like it's almost redundant. There's so many people in that. But a predominantly person of colour cast or non-white cast, people are a little bit more finicky about structural issues in a way that they probably aren't when you're looking at your traditional mainstream sci-fi, fantasy, superhero, everything.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a few ways that we were looking at it in story structure and in the show. You know, in a Western format, traditionally we have your three acts and then you raise a question and it's generally answered at the end of that. Where a lot of our stories are coming from elders and the respect that these stories are handed down to it's an honor. You've earned the right to hear this story. It's not that you deserve to hear this story. It's being passed to you because you've earned it. And so often that in itself is the process. It's what you do with that story afterwards. It's not set for you to ask questions or to want to delve deeper. It's passed to you, and then you kind of embody that story and take what you want from it. And that was kind of quite difficult. If you have a look in the first instance in the first season of Clever Man, we had a lot of our partners wanting to know where the hairy man came from. You know, and say, look, we want a scene that depicts the emerging of these creatures into this world. And for me, it was like, well, I've always been told of it that they're there and that's it. You know, I've never needed to question where they've come from or why they're there. And so we really wanted to stay true to that as much as possible. Like, we've sort of bent that rule a little bit for the show, and also to help it sit into that Western format. But still, we never explicitly say how or why they've turned up.
Yeah, well, because I just am finding it really interesting that, yeah, you're not seeing... There is no other equivalent of Clever Man at the moment on screens that I can think of. Maybe you can think of something.
Look, I think there's, you know, I think there are shows that are having a political agenda, like we do. In the superhero world, I think we've got Luke Cage, and I think...
I was thinking about Luke Cage as having a predominantly non-white cast. And a lot of the critiques that have come up around it have been things that have happened in Jessica Jones, in Daredevil, certainly in Iron Fist, which we're not even going to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just was fascinating to see the level of... Yeah, the level of antagonism that was thrown at Luke Cage as a show, when it wasn't doing anything, well, the only thing that it was doing hugely different was that it was not,
it was being
white.
Black.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. It was interesting. I posted a photo the other day of I'm currently watching. Well, I just finished last night, Dear White People, and I was really interested to see what the Universal audience are thinking of it, and went on to see that, you know, on places like Rotten Tomatoes and stuff, it was getting like 100%, and you know, a lot of people were praising it. But then on one platform, it was a lot lower, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I went to check Clever Man as well, and we were higher on these others, and there was the one platform that was lower, and it felt like, you know, going to read, you know, as you should never do, but I do, is go and read the comment section. And, you know, you find that it's harder to get past some of those critiques, because that's the first door that they get to, and they don't want to open it. And I think, you know, and I was just asking, you know, a lot of my white friends of like, can you watch it? And the first thing was like, well, I don't want to feel like I'm being preached to. And I feel like at a stage there, a lot of black storytelling has kind of got to that. And I think that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to do a superhero show, is that to embed the politics in that, to allow people to come to that on their own terms. I still think that we are quite forward in our politics, but you know, there's plenty of people who don't watch the show because they feel...
Well, it's a really fascinating... I sometimes feel like it's that that sort of thing of when you're used to silence, a whisper sounds like a yell, and it just... That's where I feel like it's sitting right now. People who are used to silence are a little disconcerted at the one,
absolutely,
two shows.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's the one question that I get asked a lot is... You know, what would you like to see as the outcome for the show? And for me, the first thing was always about empowering my son, and I've seen, you know, the way that the show has affected him and how it has empowered him. But for me, it's always also been about getting more black people on screen and seeing the genre back in on Australian television, or just in Australian cinema in general. I think we're missing genre, which we used to do a lot of. But I think it's quite hard to get through that. You know, like we were firstly making a predominantly black show, which scares a lot of people, and then doing genre that scared a lot of people. So to have the opportunity to even do it and for it to get a strong following, I think hopefully we're opening the doors for more of this sort of content.
Yeah. Well, look, we better very quickly talk about the comic book. Is, first of all, what's happening with that? Is that going to be following the same plot line? Is it going to take a whole different direction?
Yeah, so it is in the same world. The first issue is following a story of one character that we're already aware of, Malian, who was played by Adam Briggs.
Oh, yeah.
And also follows a new character that will be on the second season. But the story starts pre-season one. And will kind of, the first few issues will sort of be pre-season one all the way up to the start of season two. So it's kind of blends a bit of the two, but it doesn't specifically just follow Cohen, our main character.
Fantastic. And kind of a exciting thing to have been announced or to be able to announce at Supernova, which is where that sort of all came out in Melbourne, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I know things. look, we've probably covered so much ground on this. If you would like to know more about Blurred Culture, you can catch Ryan Griffin at the Sydney Writers Fest. He's on the Blurred Culture panel on the 25th of May. Head to the Sydney Writers Festival website for details. Sydney Writers Festival is a sponsor of 2SER, and we're very happy to have them. Ryan, thank you for taking the time this evening to have a chat with me on the Thin Black Line.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
Look, we're coming up towards the end of the program tonight. Stick around because Anna Marie has a fantastic show all set for you on Radio Atticus at 7:30. In the meantime, this is Glenn Scunthorpe. Boat on the Ocean Wild.
Time falls over your face, hide from the cold, and you shiver down the wind, past the bars and the holes. Stand in the doorway, calling out somebody's name, and it echoes down to a street light where in silence it came. But if you want to run, yeah, down through the darkness, and down past the shadows and the doubts that would lay in your mind. There was a time, my baby, you did let me in. And if we had that time over, would it change anything? You're lost, saw the boat dancing out on the wild ocean. It was swaying side by side to the mad winds that were blowing. There was a sea you always wanted to sail. Now you're stranded down on the landing, waiting on the rain. But if you want to run, yeah, down the darkness, and down past the shadows and the doubts that would lay in your mind. There was a time, my baby, you did let me in.
we have that time over, will we change anything? Comes the light. It was glowing like a fire that burned out all night. The glow danced its way across my room, bring the brightness of the day. And I wondered how long it took to get here, long the way. But if you want to run, yeah, no. And down past the shadows of the dark that would lay in your mind. There was a time, my baby, you did let me in. If we had the time over, would it change anything?
Good evening and welcome to the Thin Black Line, where
well, that was an interesting end to the song there. I wasn't expecting that. My name's Rudy Bremer. You're here on the Thin Black Line. It's almost time for me to go. But stick around for Radio Atticus in just a moment.
Don't miss your chance to see the final episode of Just Words, recorded live at 107 Projects in Redfern on Thursday, May 18, from 7 p.m. 2SER is really excited to announce that Jeremy Jones from the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council will be joining us on the night as a live guest to debate the merits of 18C. Tickets are selling fast, so don't miss out. Buy yours today, and when you arrive on the night, you'll also go in a lucky door prize to win Audio-Technica headphones. Just head to the 2SER website, 2SER.com.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
It's been great to have your company, and I hope that you can join me again next week. But don't miss out on that Just Words event happening here in Redfern on Thursday night. That's our old night from the Thin Black Line. My name's Rudy Bremer. I've really enjoyed spending the evening with you. And
stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
Stick around for Radio Ad. And my last song is not working, but Anne-Marie will be on in just a moment. Thanks for joining.